the best in chat radio designed just for you.
This is Michael Gannett with the Middle East Research Center Limited, and we are coming to you from Tel Aviv, Israel again. It seems as though I can't get away from it because there's a lot of contacts here and a lot of work that takes place all over the country, but unfortunately, the world sees Tel Aviv, so they won't insult the Muslims as the capital of Israel when we all know it's Jerusalem. I want to say thank you to America's Web Radio for allowing Insight to Israel to come to the grassroots level of the United States of America, to the patriot conservatives that stand with, pray for, and are willing to fight for the sovereignty and security of the Jewish state. You get it. You understand it. You love it. I see it in your emails. I see it in your Facebook posts. Thank you. Thank you. And the Jewish people, the Israelis, they see this and they're shocked by it simply because they hear so much. They're inundated so much by the leftist media. And so when they see your words, when I show it to especially the soldiers, I love them. They're my heart. They're very encouraged. Like, I didn't know. That's the first phrase out of their mouth. I didn't know. So anyway, so it's a beautiful day in Tel Aviv, which starts off the holiday. I've got a very special friend of mine here, Jeremy Deary, who I'm going to introduce to you here in a few minutes. Jeremy, how do you say the holiday in Hebrew?
It's Shavuot.
Shavuot.
Yes, it's the last major Jewish holiday.
Unfortunately, because I love them all.
Yeah, until Rosh Hashanah, until the new Jewish New Year.
In October.
I think this year it's late September.
Okay. Yeah, late September, because I got here October 1st and it was just ending.
Exactly.
Of last year. So Shavuot is the celebration, if I'm not mistaken, Ruth, correct? Is that correct?
Yes, I mean, it's also the keystone verse when the Jews got the Ten Commandments on Mount Sinai.
Torah.
Yes.
Yeah, we need to be thankful for that, Americans, because if it had not been for Hashem giving the Jewish people Torah, we would not have a constitutional Bill of Rights. So, anyway, so you were saying, Jeremy?
A lot of the biblical laws, as you said, were used during the Bill of Constitution, the Bill of Rights. So America did adapt many of the ancient Jewish laws into their modern day court system.
It's beautiful. It's amazing. It is amazing. I never really ever, honestly, Jeremy, contemplated the depth of that till I came here. Mm. And something inside of me just clicked. And I was like, wow, I owe these people. I have freedom. Not just because of the founding fathers, but going way back to when Moses was on the Sinai having communion with the Almighty, with Hashem. And wow, that's very powerful. I'm blessed to be here during this time. And Ruth, who is a fantastic woman, a Gentile, who finds herself in the house of David, in the lineage of the house of David. Now, I don't want to get into some depth here because it's not important, but for a Christian, Jesus, whether he's seen by the Jewish people as a prophet or by the Christians as the Messiah, the fact of the matter is, even Jesus was in the line of the house of David, which came with Ruth, with his thing, same as a Gentile, which is fascinating to me because I'm a Gentile, and people say, you have no commitment to this country, why do you love it? Why would you come here? Why would you give up all? And it's because, you know, let me say this real quick. The 12 tribes, when God had them lined up, those that believed, you take the wall of Jericho when it fell down, the woman who helped the spies with the red cord out the window. A lot of you listening know what I'm talking about. When the 12 tribes, she believed in the one true God. When the 12 tribes lined up, the people who were not Jewish, who were Gentiles but believed in Hashem, they were at the back of those 12 tribes. Brother, I'm the guy at the back. And it doesn't matter to me. I'm marching with the tribes, you know. So it's exciting. So anyway, you were going to say?
No, I was just going to say that first, not just a Gentile, but you're a righteous Gentile, you know, even the Jewish Bible does, you know, categorize, you know, Gentiles who are not part of the Jewish faith, and righteous Gentiles who, you know, have their heart and soul among the Jewish people, help the Jewish people and support both the Jewish people and the state of Israel. Therefore, you are a righteous Gentile, and, you know, Israel, the Jewish people, owe a lot of gratitude and thanks to you and all your hard work.
Well, I appreciate it, man.
Country.
My conscience, mm-hmm. My conscience and my heart would not let me do otherwise. You know? It just, because I was raised knowing the history, and it's amazing. It's amazing. Jeremy, we've talked a lot of times. And when I've traveled all over this country,
mm-hmm.
And everywhere I go, it's wow. Everywhere I go, in 65 years, and you and I have it easy, whether it's in the United States or here. And to this degree, someone else scratched this out.
Mm-hmm.
Someone else, their hands would bleed, their brow would sweat, and all we have to do is maintain it. And this is why. When I look at Israel and the threat from Islam from within, those who have citizenship, those who can vote, those who have representation in the Knesset, those who do not have to serve in the military, which, quite honestly, I wouldn't want to serve with them anyway. I know there's some Muslims that do, actually some Arabs that do. But as far as Islam, me personally, not speaking for anyone else, I would not want to be sleeping in a bunk next to one of these guys. Our people in the United States military have seen... You got to sleep with one eye open. But anyway, in 65 years, what a blessing this country has been, not just to people that live here, but to the world. And it's fascinating.
For a baby country, 65 years old, that has, gave a lot to the world. I mean, you know, the biblical connotation of Israel is to be a light upon the world. And that's what Israel always strives to do, whether it's, you know, humanitarian aid, economic resources that they, that they do international business with all over the world, to agricultural aid to third world countries like in India, Thailand. So there's a vast, number of different ways that Israel always tries to contribute positively to the world, especially when there's earthquake disasters like in Haiti.
Yeah. Like in Haiti, they've still got a small group of folks in Haiti, I think.
I think so. They had the first hospital, mobile hospital, on the site literally within a few hours after the earthquake hit. And even if it's countries that are not so-called friendly with Israel, like Iran, Israel will always give out our hands in peace and friendship to Iran and other hostile countries if they are in need.
Now, Jeremy, let's thank you for that input, because these are a lot of things that Americans don't know, and I see that you do the same thing. I try to post information, not just silliness or frivolity, whether it's things that I've been able to show from here or videos, articles on YouTube, from YouTube, that Americans can look at and see the greatness of this country. So, Jeremy, we met at a Lone Soldier dinner.
Lone Soldier Shabbat dinner.
In Tel Aviv, yeah. And I love the Lone Soldiers. These guys and gals are the best. I mean, to think that they don't have to serve, but they do. Wow, that's character. That's integrity.
Especially since they have no family in the country either. They're doing this all alone. Of course, the army supports and helps them. And they give their heart and soul to the army and to the state of Israel. But and most of them are more hardworking Zionists than the Israelis who are, of course, have to serve in the army because, they do it out of their heart instead of, mandatory requirements.
Yeah. I'm glad that you said that because sometimes, and this is why, Jeremy, I have so many times have been so encouraged to walk up to a soldier. Actually, I'm sharing, not airing. There's a difference in the mentality. But I was at the bus station last night in Jerusalem, and I went to get something to drink, and this young soldier girl was standing there buying a few cookies, probably taking them home to her family for Shavuot,
Mm-hmm.
And I walked up to the guy when he was weighing them, And I said, law. And I pulled out my wallet.
Mm-hmm.
And that girl was like shocked. She's like, law, you don't have to do that. No, you don't. I said, you deserve it.
Mm.
You protect this country. You defend this country. And this is the least I could do.
Mm.
Like, that girl was like totally shocked. And you know what, Jeremy? If we can buy a coffee, and I want to encourage Israelis. I hope there's some Israelis that are very good friends of mine, that I love you. I hope that you maybe find yourself in that place where you see a soldier.
Mm.
And you buy him a sandwich or a coffee. I'm telling you, it brings me joy, Jeremy, when I see the gratitude on their face, you know? Anyway, so we met at this Lone Soldier dinner. And
it helps to show the Israeli soldier how important their work is and how appreciative. Because many of them don't realize it, and that, just exactly what they do. Some of them have the office jobs, and it's not, the most action-packed.
They say it's not so important.
Yeah. So, but when you elevate to that, friendship status, even a charity form of, giving money or giving aid or whatever, it does to show that, they're not just a soldier. It's a very righteous job. They're doing a very hard job.
Absolutely.
It's a very respected job.
Absolutely. So, absolutely. Wow.
It's a wonderful job you did.
Oh, man, I tell you, I love them. I see them. I wish I could hug them on the neck just because... I mean,
these Israelis would mimic your kindness and.
Well, I mean, it's about being an influence.
Mm-hmm.
One man cannot change the world, but he can be an influence. Mm-hmm. You and I both know that, as someone who has lived in the United States. Let's talk about that. We met at this Shabbat dinner for the Lone Soldiers, and Jeremy, I like you. I know we don't hang out every day or anything. And Jeremy's let me, actually, on the weekend, his girlfriend lives in Jerusalem. He goes there for Shabbat, and he's been kind enough to let me come down to Tel Aviv and for a couple of days and relax. And I'm grateful for that. So we met at the Shabbat dinner and kind of kept in touch. Jeremy, I want to... You lived some time in the United States.
That's right.
Now, before I get to you, I want to say Jeremy currently is unemployed. The unemployment rate in Israel is 6.5%. I hope you don't mind me telling this.
No.
There's a reason behind mm-hmm. my thinking. And because I've been there, and there's a lot of Americans that are there. But as someone who's worked in politics, I know what it's like to go through those stints without having a job. But Jeremy's kind of got some very interesting background. But anyway, so you're from originally... From where?
No, I was born in New York City.
Born in, like, a lot of... But thankfully, let me add a side note. I don't mean to keep interrupted. But thankfully, I read in the Jerusalem Post the other day that the numbers in Israel have finally surpassed the numbers of Jews in New York City.
Oh, really?
Which I think is fantastic. It's about time that Israel, take the lead on that. And put some guilt on those American right-wing Jews who need to come home, bring your business, your fight, put your children in the military... Prosper this country. God will bless your life. Hashem will bless you. Anyway, I could get off on that all day, but I'm very hard on that, bro. You have a responsibility. And some of them say, you don't. And anyway, so you were born in New York City.
I was born in Manhattan.
You certainly don't have the accent.
I'm very international. Like I said, at the age of 5, I moved to France, and I came back to the States around the age of 13, 14.
Now, what did you do? What did your parents do while you were in France?
We left to France as a family. My father works in the furniture business. My mom works, she used to work with another pharmaceutical company. Now she works with the Israeli pharmaceutical company,
nice.
Teva.
Yeah.
The one before was Eastern European. So they had a branch in France as well. And then at the age of 13, 14, I came back to America. Did my high school and did my college at Drew University. And then I did my... Then I came to Israel.
Drew University is in New York?
New Jersey.
New Jersey.
I lived in New Jersey.
How old are you now?
How old am I now?
Okay.
25,
okay. Wow, you're a young guy, but I've read your resume. You got a lot of background to you.
Yeah. I'll be 26 in July.
But you have your master's now.
I have my master's.
Wow.
Tel Aviv University.
Tel Aviv. So you finished your high school. Did you have that accent in New York?
No, I have a European accent.
Okay.
So most.
No, it sounds like it. So
no, nobody can tell I'm American.
Yeah, because I sure didn't know when I first met you. I was like, what? So you went to high school in the States. You went to college in the States. After you left college, then you came here to Israel.
Yeah.
How old were you?
I was around like 20. I was around 20 years old.
Go ahead.
No, basically, my interaction with Israel started in college at Drew University. My freshman year of Drew University, I did the two-week trip of Birthright.
Oh, okay.
Then as a sophomore, I wanted to study at Tel Aviv University to do one semester. There was a big problem because of the travel warning from the State Department, and Israel is on that list that it's not recommended to travel to Israel because the West Bank and Gaza is considered Israel. So my university did not allow me to study abroad in Israel.
Yeah.
And I fought a three-month fight from October to December, to convince my university to let me to study abroad in Israel when they had Egypt and Yemen on the study abroad list. And Yes. I even met, when I was a freshman, and the president of the University of Sana'a in the capital of Yemen, who encouraged students to go and travel.
And what year was this when you were in college? It's very important.
Freshman year, so.
Freshman year what?
2006.
Wow, that wasn't that long ago.
No.
That was, okay, because that was during the second Lebanon War?
It was right after. Exactly.
Right after the second, and they had Egypt and Yemen. Yemen, where there's like all these terrorists, Muslim terrorists. Let me emphasize the word Muslim. These are not extremists. These people are following the Quran. So the media, even Fox News, and all of these are not extremists. In Islam, everybody plays a role. You got the folks who want to get out but can't because they'll get killed. Even here in Israel, if they sell a house to a Jew, they will die. They'll be hunted down and killed. And these are your local little taxi cab drivers because they got bloodthirst on their tongue. And they drive around, they make their money, but the minute they hear, oh, it's Allah Akbar. Mm-hmm. Wake up, America, wake up. I'm telling you, this is coming straight from Israel. So anyway, I could get off on that all day. But you had to convince them.
Yes, I did a three-month fight with the university administration. I spoke to the president, his advisors, the whole administration, the top professors. We got the entire pro-Israel organizations coming on my behalf to help in this. Even the government.
What are the organizations so we can mention them? Do you?
We had the Stand With Us and David Project.
Stand With Us, yeah, and we know, yeah, that's
David
good.
Project, which is very active in the States, in New York, Boston, and Florida.
Again.
We had, the Anti-Defamation League, which combats anti-Semitism.
Yeah.
We had the Israeli consulate in New York City bring in their supervisors, as well as the consul general came to the university at the end of November when it was getting critical time to speak to the president of my university, who, by the way, was a Jew, and said to me, to my face, as a Jew, he feels very bad about my situation, but as the president of Drew University, he will not move an inch to let me go to Israel. This was a Jew.
Wow.
So, and then finally the governor of New Jersey at the time intervened. And he even sent me a personal handwritten letter to my house, thanking me for bringing it to his attention.
Nice.
The Israel Campus Coalition, ICC, got involved too and promoted that as well. And, of course, the local Jewish news, the Star Ledger from New Jersey, the Jerusalem Post, all publicize it in the media so everyone can read it on Google if you want. All the articles are still up there.
Wow, what a story.
In the end, basically, they changed the study abroad. I went to Israel. And now everyone can study in Israel or intern in Israel.
And I would be interested in knowing if they still have Egypt and Yemen on that list.
I'm not sure Yemen, probably Egypt maybe. But now with the Arab Spring, who knows? I mean, not many Americans have left
Egypt. The Arab Spring that trickled down into a bloodbath,
In Israel, the saying is Arab winter.
Exactly. I want to throw out this comment. It's very interesting, Jeremy, that you had to go through that. That's look, man, most folks would have rolled over.
Yeah.
And said, well, it's not going to happen, but I appreciate the fight you put up.
I fought for this for two big reasons. One reason is because I realized that the only reason why Israel is on this travel warning list is because of the terrorist activities against Israel, which means that if there's no tourists going to Israel, the terrorists win because Israel loses legitimacy very fast.
Absolutely.
So this is a fight against terrorism. And B, you know, I fought this to emphasize, you know, the uniqueness of Israel. Only in Israel can a Jew or a Christian, you know, study and receive all the benefits that one would receive in America, like freedom of worship, freedom of speech, freedom of education. You know, they can be educated and get degrees and they can actually thrive in their professions. Only in Israel you can do that. In Israel you can also benefit from using both Hebrew and Arabic, from having the top, you know, educational fields in science, medicine, agriculture, architecture, archaeology especially. So you have, you know, culture, history, technology, everything in this one country that really you can't really get in the Muslim world in the Middle East.
No, that's true. And let me say this for the listener. Jeremy, I found something out that really ticked me off. I get tired. Let me say that. I'm going to say this. I'm tired of the Muslims. I get tired of their moaning and groaning. I get tired of them scapegoating their actions and never being held accountable. Islam is the problem in the world, not the Jews, because I heard it again last night from a taxi cab driver here in Jerusalem. Oh, it's a complicated problem. No, it's not complicated. It's not complicated. But Jeremy, I found something out that really ticked me off. Jeremy, I found out that the Muslims here at the universities get a huge discount. Is this true?
Yes, Arab citizens do get special benefits that Jewish residents do not get. Because, you know, they're second, or they can be considered second-class citizens, even though they have the exact same legal rights.
And same rights.
Same rights. You know, there's Arab Knesset members, there's Arab businessmen, there's Arab doctors.
Same rights.
And what I mean, Arab, I'm emphasizing both the Christian and the Muslims.
Right,
you know,
right.
You know.
But let me say this. I've had Israeli students tell me that the Muslim students complain because it's so hard. Listen.
That's true.
This is the left, okay? This is how the left works, whether it's these, and I don't care what color they are, these welfare cases that got they have five or six government cell phones on my dime, and the same goes here in Israel. It's and the Muslims get all these discounts, and they get representation in the Knesset. They don't have to fight in the military. I wouldn't want to be a Jewish soldier and have a Muslim fighting next to me. I know there's a few that are an exception to the rule, but even I would still sleep with one eye open. But I see the threat all around, and it's like, what's the left is the left is the left. And historically, the left and Islam have walked hand in hand. Now, I know in Europe, the left is called the right wing. So let's keep it in perspective here, because I go to the Holocaust Museum in the States and they say right wing, the Hitler, the right wing and stuff. And I'm thinking, they're not smart enough today to dichotomize in history the difference, you know? Yeah. So anyway, I just wanted to clarify that because it's completely unfair. They're treated as equally as citizens, as equally. And have more freedoms than they would in any Muslim country and around them.
Yes.
It makes blood squirt out of my eyes. It drives me insane.
They have equally the same freedom. They have actually more freedom, especially, you know, I mean, if you look in Egypt and Syria right now, you know, the situation is deteriorating. They've been shooting down sometimes their universities. In Syria, they did target the Damascus University. You know, but even if there's a non-warfare going on, you know, the rules are very strict against, you know, what can Muslims say and not say, who can they, you know, if they follow the law of the land, then more or less okay. But if you want to share your opinion about, you know, contradictory, you know, you'll be locked up in jail or tortured. You know, so it's a very backwards, many of these Muslim countries. Not all, but many of them.
Well, Turkey's on its way there.
You know, Turkey's
definitely on its way there.
The reason why I'm not mentioning Turkey and Iran is because they're not Arab. You know, Turkey is
Turkish. Right, but they're still Muslim.
They're still Muslims, that's true. I mean, Turkey is another, you know, case of, you know, they're trying to bring back the, Erdogan, the prime minister, is trying to bring back the Ottoman, you know, control over the Middle East. Yeah. And he's in competition with the Iranians who want to, you know, pursue their Shiite policy on the Middle East. I mean, this is a classic Islamic internal warfare between the Sunnis and the Shiites in the Middle East. I mean, entangled with the Jewish homeland, you know, in Israel. So now it's a very interesting time to be in the Middle East, is because of these internal warfares in the Muslim world. You have the Muslim-Jewish warfare. I mean, then you have Al-Qaeda versus the West. So it's very, you know, different, you know, side battles.
And this is very interesting because it's amazing because in the middle of it all, you have China and Russia, which are helping Iran. China's in Syria. Russia's in Syria.
The naval base.
And it makes me wonder. We've got guys like John McCain in the West, in the United States, that are saying we need to help the Syrian freedom fighters, which is the biggest. This guy's, I'm going to say it, John McCain's a buffoon and an idiot. Okay, that's not coming from Jeremy. That's coming from Michael Gannot. I apologize, man. Incompetency on Capitol Hill and disgust me. It's loathing. But it's amazing to see this chessboard that's shaped up because, you know, if Israel strikes Syria because they have to protect their own borders, you've now got Russia involved with Bashar. But if we kill the rebels, the CIA's armed them and given them money. So then it's, at the end of the day, the rogue regimes, whether they're Muslim or not, rogue regimes, and groups that basically want the Jewish people gone. There's no other way to put it. The Russians are going to come for your oil.
Syria eventually. Is a very interesting complexity because of the two sides. One side you have President Bashar al-Assad, who is in line with Iran, Hezbollah. And Hamas used to be, but they withdrew their support after the brutal massacre of the people. Now Qatar is trying to fund Hamas. But Iran and Hezbollah are their main foothold in Bashar Assad's war against the rebel forces. The problem with the rebels is that we have, you know, the rebels are split in half between people who really generally do want change and the Al-Qaeda, Jabhat al-Nusra, which is the Al-Qaeda front of the rebels, who do want to gain the weapons and want to use it against Israel. The third front that we have is the Palestinians living on the Golan Heights that were Palestinian, you know, refugees, you know, after 1948.
From Jordan.
Yeah, you know, from Jordan and from, you know, British-mandated Palestine before Israel was created. These people are, you know, violent extremists who are waiting for the day to shoot rockets into Israel, and they're located on the Golan Heights, on the Syrian side. So Israel is in a very interesting dilemma. I mean, Israel doesn't want to get involved. The official policy is no involvement. However, we cannot allow the Syrian president to give advanced weaponry to Hezbollah, especially chemical weaponry. The chemical weapons is the core issue of Syria when it comes to Israel. We're very, very worried that the chemical weapons will be used either against the rebel forces or against Israel in the future, or that they will be transferred to Hezbollah.
Let me clarify. Hezbollah is in Lebanon.
Hezbollah is in Lebanon. The Syrian civil war could spill over into Lebanon. I mean, it already is, you know, intermixed because of the you know, Hezbollah involvement. But there's also many Sunni Shiites and Alawites who are Bashar Assad's clan living in Lebanon too.
Yeah.
So they get affected as well. We know that the Syrian-Lebanese border gets violent many times. And
I'm headed back up there soon. I have to go up. I have to go up.
So
anyway.
So yeah, I mean, so basically, like, the Middle East has like three major problems. You have the Syrian chemical weapon, you know, nightmare scenario. We have the Iranian nuclear weapons that the clock is ticking on how long, you know, they'll have to make the one nuclear bomb. And then we have the Arab Spring, which is bringing up, you know, a lot of Muslim Brotherhood radical forces in the Middle East. And finally, we have Al-Qaeda, which is, you know, reaching the Golan Heights. as well as reaching the Sinai Desert, occasionally shooting rockets into Eilat and the southern part of Israel in the Negev. So Israel is in a very strategic dilemma right now.
Yeah. Jeremy, we're going to come back. We're going to talk more about your background. I want to say thank you to America's Web Radio. This is Insight to Israel.
You are listening to America's Web Radio, your voice in the matter.
And we're back. This is Michael Gonneau with Insight to Israel on America's Web Radio. And, wow, it's another beautiful day in the Jewish state. And it's strange because we had some rain last night, some very serious thunder and lightning, which is unusual because usually after Pesach, after Passover, we don't get much rain here in the Jewish state. It was quite unusual, but the good thing is, folks were saying, I got a bunch of stuff on Facebook and text messages, what's the weather's doing up there, Michael, in Jerusalem? And I said, well, it's raining, and it's thunder and lightning, and at the end of the day, even though it's unusual, the great thing about it is Hashem does whatever he wants. That is, and the rain's good for the land.
The rain is very good for the land. In biblical times, the rain was considered good luck and a sign of blessings to come. What is unusual is usually we don't usually get rain after Passover, Passover-Easter time period, and now we seem to be getting rain. Actually, even for tomorrow, Shavuot, there could be more rain and maybe more thunderstorms.
Nice, nice. Now, for those of you who didn't catch the first segment, I am here with a good friend of mine, Jeremy Deary. And Jeremy and I were just talking about it's overwhelming. The rogue countries, the Muslim countries that are all involved in one big mess. And at the end of the day, we can only surmise that their goal is to take out the Jewish state because recently they have found. Now, I've had some Israelis debate this who don't keep up with the news like I do. Because they say, Michael, you're wrong. And then I say, well, I would send you a link, but I think it's your country. You need to go look it up yourself. You have more oil, Jeremy, in this country than Iran and Saudi Arabia combined. Now, that's a fact. And you're number two in the world when it comes to shale oil. And you have enough natural gas. Now you're actually independent now. Mm-hmm. Because BB in the Jerusalem Post came out with an article 3 weeks ago where he said, now we're now energy independent when it comes to natural gas. So if you want to invest in anything, as the U.S. economy goes down because we are promoting homosexual marriage, as we promote the slaughter of children in the womb because of our irresponsibility and selfishness, and some of you leftists out there that are going to listen to this, I'm not anti-American, I'm anti-leftist. And if I had my way, you'd be thrown out of the country because you've done nothing but, and it's the right wing's fault. We sat back and said, oh, they have a different opinion until the ideology slipped into the point to where now it is infected like a cancer, our colleges and universities. Look, the left knows what they're doing. We may have beat them in World War II, but they just got smarter and upgraded and went and got PhDs and fought against Vietnam and smoked their dope and gave us syphilis and gonorrhea and made their daisy chains. That's what peace and love gets you, brother. Syphilis and gonorrhea. You know what I mean? That's all free love gets you. You know, daisy chains. It kills me. Anyway, so, Jeremy, we were just talking. Got off on there a little bit.
Well, the left is very problematic in Israel, too. They're just concentrated on undermining the state of Israel.
And let me clarify. Some people say, well, what do you do, Mike? Well, number one, God's going to have to solve the problem. But at the same time, people who believe in what's right, you have a responsibility. Your life is not your own. You have a responsibility to take a stand for what is right and what is true, no matter who's offended, no matter who may be mad about it. No matter what your job, no matter what it costs you, you should be willing to take a stand for what's right. And whether it's for the principles of the Constitution and the Bill of Rights, which are come from Judeo-Christian principles from Torah, or whether it's fighting with the Jewish people for their sovereignty and security in the Jewish state against Islam. Any way that we can, this should be our goal. You know, the prophet Nehemiah, I think it was, they were rebuilding the walls. And sword in one hand, Mm-hmm. And a trowel where you throw concrete, you know, down on the mortar down on the brick, and a trowel in another hand. You work and fight. And if you can't multitask, I'm sorry for those of you whose attention span is about 5 seconds long in the United States. You work and fight. You don't say, well, I got my family to take care of. It's me and no more. There's no excuse anymore. Then you need to get out. You need to go. Anyway, so I said my piece, Jeremy. Jeremy, I want to say thank you for being here. I know, like I said previously, we don't spend every day together. There's no need for that. But
it's not spending time.
I appreciate the times that I've got to hang out with you, talk with you on the phone. I appreciate the stuff you post on Facebook.
And many more times to come.
Many more.
If anyone is interested, I do a lot of pro-Israel advocacy on Facebook. I constantly update, literally on a daily basis, exactly what's going on in this country, the barrier security challenges, and the different achievements that Israel has, you know, achieved throughout, you know, the years, especially recently. So content on a daily basis, my profile, my pro-Israel groups, which some include more than 2,000 members worldwide. So if anyone is interested, they can be updated with exactly what's going on in Israel by the T, you know, just by checking my
profile. How do you spell your last name, Jeremy?
D-E-R-Y.
Yeah, go to Facebook and friend Jeremy.
I'm also friends with Michael.
Yeah, Jeremy's friends with me, so you can find him on my friends list. Jeremy, let's get back to, sometimes we can veer off, but these are important things we've been talking about what's taking place here in Israel today, what's surrounding the Jewish state. So you finally, you got to come to Israel to go to school. Under the guise of what university?
From the States.
Okay.
From Drew University.
Drew University,
in New Jersey.
Okay. So you come to Israel, you'd already done Birthright, and to clarify, Birthright is where Jewish kids from other countries come to the United States for what, 2 months?
No, Birthright is when Jewish students come to Israel for 2 months.
Did I say United States?
Yeah.
Okay, good.
for 2 weeks. It's a week and a half. They see the whole country from the north to the south, and they get to learn about the country, not really the political issues, but more about just what the country is geographically and the connection to Judaism. And then they go back after a week and a half. So I've done that. So then after I came back to Israel, I personally worked in the Knesset with the Likud party. Which
is the right-wing party.
Prime Minister's Bibi Netanyahu's party. I was a parliamentary assistant to a Druze minister. He's an Arab, but he's not Muslim. The Druze alone have their own personal stories. It is very fascinating. Also, I worked in the foreign ministry and the Ministry of Hasbara, doing pro-Israel advocacy in both English and French. And I also worked in different think tanks doing research in the Middle East, doing different events, organizing a major China-Israel event in Israel, bringing both the diplomats and businessmen from both countries together at the IDC Institute in Herzliya, which is next to Tel Aviv. And
what's IDC stand for?
Interdisciplinary. What does the C stand for?
No, it's okay. There's plenty of acronyms I don't know that I use.
Yeah, it's like interdisciplinary something. Committee? No, it's maybe center.
No, it's a good school. Look, yeah. I know some people that are there right now from the United States. So
it's a very good school. It's a very international school. It's private. It's the only private university in Israel. Also, I've been to tons of different political events, from the presidential conference to events dealing with the army and warfare, to different events dealing with politicians from around the world, to literally every form of event I've been to. I know many of the top political leaders in Israel. And so yes, I've been very active both politically and in pro-Israel advocacy.
Nice. You know, Jeremy's, as I stated earlier, the unemployment rate in Israel is about 6.5%. And like Jeremy, I feel for you, bro. It's hard on your ego. And I don't want to say ego. It's hard on your pride as a man.
Yeah.
But Jeremy's not working right now, but he stays very busy. And you recently just got in the Jerusalem Post.
Yes, last month. They did a whole piece about how I've helped Israel. You can read a lot more about it. You know, I've also
Is it a permanent fixture on your Facebook page?
Yeah, I mean...
It should be.
Yeah. I mean, the Jerusalem Post did ran several articles about me. This is not the first one. This is the latest one. You can easily see exactly, you know, the timeline from when I first came to Israel to, you know, now, present day.
But
the challenging part in Israel when it comes to jobs is that in Israel, in the political world, the government is not very big like the like in America. B, ministers can only have two or three aides, not like in America where they can have more aides. And C, there's not a high budget for, you know, to staff all the ministers, as well as there's a government program to must enter to get into the top leagues. But, you know, besides that, you know, there's other things to do with pro-Israel advocacy organizations, media, like the Jerusalem Post, the Times of Israel, which is very big also in America. So, you know, there's other fields to try and, you know, enter into the political world. However, business and high tech, you know, and science is booming in Israel. Every student can easily find a good job, get paid very well. And also in all the social sciences as well, you know, psychology, sociology, even medicine. Medicine is huge, hospital, doctors, many students can easily, you know.
Well, you know, it's funny that you say medicine, because I got a buddy of mine from the States, and he wants to come here and help. He'd love to come here and work. He's getting ready to be a nurse.
Wow.
And he said, when I'm done, you're the first guy I'm looking up. It's amazing how advanced, because every time I'm in Tel Aviv, you know, I talk to people and they're like, I'm like, what do you do for a living? And it's always consistently, I mean, I'm sure, I know there's other occupations here, but I'm in high tech. And I'm like, wow. I mean, this country does lead the way.
I mean, look, it's very interesting for American students. The one thing I want to mention is that after my fight with Drew University to study abroad for one semester at Tel Aviv University, the year after when I came back for my junior year, I did a major event to try and change the public image that my university faced with the Jewish world and with Israel, because the original image was that they were going to be blacklisted as one of the most anti-Semitic universities in the States.
Wow.
But it didn't happen in the end because they changed their policy. Also, many of the Jewish donors were going to take out their money, and the future Jewish students were pulling out of the registrations.
Nice.
So they were going to lose a lot. But none of that happened. In the end, they changed their policy. But
only because of money, though. Not because of... in my opinion...
Changed it for all the factors, frankly. The Israeli consul general visited, the American governor, the New Jersey governor visited.
Yeah.
From all the different pressure, you know, areas that they got attacked.
But let me say this, though. If they had any character and integrity, that would have never been in place to begin with. And they only capitulated because of the outside. I'll tell you what, brother, I'd say let them... Look, you fought the fight. But today, for me, some of these folks, I say let them starve. I'm hardcore, bro.
Yeah.
You're anti-Semitic and you cater to Islam because the Arabic world, Saudi Arabia, gives billions of dollars to these universities and colleges, Harvard, Georgetown University, you know?
Yeah.
And we're going to see them capitulate too and become anti. Look, all over the universities and campuses, all over the country, there's anti-apartheid week against Israel, and there's no apartheid in this country whatsoever. It's a bogus lie. It's the biggest fraudulent lie next to global warming that has ever been purported.
It's very true, and you know, the West has to stop being scared of using the terms radical and Islam. You know, Islam as a religion is very
it's radical.
Problematic. I mean, it's true. I mean, the text itself, the Quran, I read the Quran. It is, you know, they do mention Jews are pigs, Jews are liars, Christians are infidels. So there is a, you know, clear textual, you know, proof that Muslims have to wage a holy war against non-Muslims. You know, either you become a Muslim or you die. That's the end of the
day. That's it. Jeremy, let me throw this in, because I'll take it one step further, brother. And I'm an American, I'm a guest in this country, and I love this country. But I'll tell you what, I will always say it. It is a false religion. There is no Allah. Muhammad was a child molesting. This is not Jeremy saying, this is Michael Gannett, so I don't want him to... This religion was born out of bloodshed, bribery, and perversion. And some dude wrote a bunch of texts, and it's never... it kills me. It just kills me how far this thing has come. Of course, we know that the Arabs, which actually Islam came from the Arab people, and then expanded throughout the Middle East and Africa and so on and so forth. But it is amazing how this false religion, we know that, first of all, you guys are cousins. Cousins? Step something? Is it cousins?
Cousins, yeah.
Cousins.
We both share the same grandfather, Abraham, but we have a different mother. I mean, we have Sarah and...
you mean father. You both have the same father.
Yeah. Abraham is this one. And, one son was Isaac, and the other one was Ishmael from his mother Hagar, which was Abraham's Egyptian maidservant. And that sort of spawned the Islamic faith or the Arab faith.
I'm going to interrupt you here.
Mm-hmm.
Israelis that may listen to this, mm-hmm. because America, it's every man for himself there now because we're so far gone. Mm-hmm. And that's not gloom and doom, brother. That's realistic. But Israelis, let me say this because we got a disgusting event coming up called the Gay Pride Parade here in Israel. Israelis, listen, you would not have this conflict if Abraham had done the right thing and been obedient to God. When God said, I'm going to do it, Sarah said, I'm too old, how can I have children? And they didn't, I'm not claiming they should be perfect, I'm not perfect. But if they would have, that's a big thing, God's talking to you. Mm-hmm. And you're going to have number of those stars in the sky, the seasons, the
sands and the stars.
Yeah, the sands and the stars.
Mm-hmm.
And yet they doubted God, and Sarah said, well, let me give you my handmaiden.
Mm-hmm.
That was disobedience, and you see where disobedience gets you.
Mm.
Centuries of conflict with the Jewish people. Just think if Abraham would have been obedient and not gone, wow. Wow. Can you imagine the bloodshed that would have been not taking place? But at the end of the day, so my point is that Israel, listen, don't give one inch of land. Don't compromise your morals for the sake of being seen as a democracy. Because that's what it is. But that doesn't mean you have to accept everything coming down the road. It doesn't mean you have to open your arms wide to the homosexuals or give them a permit for a parade. Because at the end of the day, the left is going to hate you anyway. All they want to do is pollute your society. You know? Because the left does this. If they can't get you from without, they'll get you from within.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, I got off on
the tangent. Well, I mean, Michael did raise a very strong point about the land for peace strategy that Israelis try to employ. You know, that the idea is, you know, you give the Palestinians more land and they will be peaceful and nonviolent and hopefully recognize Israel for the Jewish homeland, as a Jewish homeland. The problem is it backfired. We emptied Gaza. We took out all of the settlements in
You're talking about Oslo in 96, right?
Yes, exactly. Yeah. Oslo 96. We took out all of the settlements. We pulled them out. And then what we got in return is literally on a daily basis, Qassam rockets from the Hamas government, which controls the Strip, into Israeli territories. And really only until recent, until Operation Pillar of Defense, a couple of months ago, that the rocket attacks has drastically reduced. However, there is still occasional rocket attacks that the South deals with. Now the issue with the Strip is not really the Hamas, but we have smaller organizations that swear their allegiance to Iran or to Al-Qaeda and don't follow Hamas's, you know, dictates, and they launch rockets no matter what happens.
Wow.
So there's an internal Islamic battle going on within the Gaza Strip. And all this is just because Israelis pulled out territories in the hopes that we could give the Palestinians land and the recognition of a state for themselves. Now, the issue of the West Bank is now with the West Bank, we have...
I call it the Left Bank.
Yeah, well, the Left Bank, or Judea and Samaria, the biblical name for it. You know, we have a problem where that, you know, there is, you know, the settlements are booming. Jews are coming and living there, thriving there, major societies.
On their own land.
On their own land. I mean, this is truly the biblical land of Israel. You know, where Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, this is exactly where they lived. You know, they all, you know, they lived around Hebron. You know, the Cave of Machpelah, which is where they're all buried, is right there. you know, the so this is really the ancient land of Israel, is Judea and Samaria.
Let me clarify something here. What people may not know, the West Bank or the left bank, as I call it, Judea and Samaria, is divided up into three sections.
Mm-hmm.
You have the section zones, the Jews live in.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, am I right or wrong that the sector that the Jews live in, which is Jewish land according to the law, not just let's leave the Bible aside, even though we can't.
Yeah.
Let's do that for a second.
Yeah,
but in Jewish land, on Jewish land, they want you to stop building.
Yeah, they want to freeze many times. Even yesterday alone, we were talking about the E1 zones. And they want us to do partial freezing of settlements just to gain confidence, building trust with the Palestinians. My gesture to the Palestinians is stop the incitements against Jews in your educational systems.
Absolutely.
Stop the lying. When President Obama came, we have proof that Mahmoud Abbas, when Obama came to his office, Abbas took it down a big poster on his wall that showed his version of peace with Israel, which included the whole land of Palestine. So he took it off out of the wall. I can send you proof of the article, but we know that the Palestinians will lie and deceive just to, you know, gain international support.
Absolutely.
While speaking in Arabic, telling that they want peace just for one reason: make war, the ultimate end goal, but during that peacetime is to accumulate enough weaponry and aid to be strong enough to take over and kick the Jews out to the ocean. To this day, the Palestinians are still inciting. This is a big problem to peace. The other big problem to peace is, who is the Palestinian Authority? Who is the one actually responsible for the Palestinian people? Is it the Fatah movement in the West Bank, or controlled by Abbas? Or is it Hamas, controlled by Khani and Khaled Mashal?
Using some terms there, I think some Americans.
They need to look it up. These are the two political leaders, leadership of the Hamas movement. Khaled Mashal, for example, used to be stationed in Syria. The Israelis tried to poison him, and so they backfired. The Syrian government found out, and we gave them the antidote. He's still alive. But the problem is this: if we do an election, a westernized election, the Hamas will have more support than the Fatah, which means Hamas is mostly the legitimate body of the Palestinian people. The problem is it's a terrorist organization. We do not negotiate with terrorists. The Hamas does not recognize Israel at all. The Hamas charter states is the destruction of Israel, and that Jews, are liars and have no right whatsoever to this land. They also use their own people as human shields. The Israeli army, whenever we go into Gaza,
yeah,
they constantly alert the civilians that we're going to go in, we're going to bomb this location,
yeah,
and they must get out. We alerted an
They actor. Make cell phone calls, too.
We make cell phone calls, we drop pamphlets, we do everything possible to minimize civilian casualties. The Hamas, time and again, hijacks every form of possibility to inflict maximum civilian casualties, in order that Israel is blamed, and that we lose world legitimacy, and they gain more legitimacy. Thank God this time we were able to hit most of the missile targets, the storage centers, and the missile depots, and we struck most of their short and long-range missiles that they smuggled. Now, by the way, which was another side effect of the Arab Spring, because now that Libya is in chaos after the death of a dictator, Muammar Gaddafi, the Al-Qaeda has, grown in Libya.
Yeah.
The different tribes are, clashing among each other.
They set a big car bomb yesterday.
Exactly. And the weapon smuggling is, thriving. And they're smuggling through the Sinai Desert into Gaza.
And Hillary Clinton, on top of that, lied. I'm going to get in U.S. politics, which is because the left is a threat to our national security, because nothing will happen to these people. Hillary Clinton runs. Think about this. I was thinking about this while you were talking about it. Bill Clinton basically forced Oslo on the Jewish people. But had Yasser Arafat up there with Perez. Was it Perez, Shimon Perez?
It would Barack was the prime minister.
Okay, Ehud Barak. Yeah, forced him up there, mm-hmm, shaking hands, the world media. Mm-hmm. Bill Clinton, so great. I get tired of these sycophant freaks who say Bill Clinton was so good. They obviously don't know American policy and how things work, but he forced the Oslo Accords on the Jewish people. Just, I'm seeing a similarity because the Clintons, they're siding with Islam. Of course, they're leftists, so it doesn't surprise me. But, you know, and they are responsible. They may have not pulled the trigger. They may have not detonated the bomb. But every politician that caters to Islam, John McCain, listen to me. You are responsible for any Jew that dies because you create policy that funds Islam. And so therefore, you are directly responsible. And Clinton pushed this thing on the Jews. They lost land. Jeremy, what's going on with that land right now? The Muslims haven't done anything with it.
No.
I'm sure they trashed every home that was there. Mm-hmm. Just like the left does, the welfare cases in the United States that live in government housing. There's nothing going on. They say there's nothing there now.
That's right. It's a desert. I mean,
it's outrageous. I can't. Muslim contribution. I'm sorry. I sucked at algebra, Jeremy. I am ticked off at the Muslims for giving us algebra.
I mean, it's true that, you know, in the ancient Islamic empires of the Abbasids and all that ruled the Middle East, they, you know, did contribute a lot to civilization, including medicine and mathematics.
But they were still bloody. They took over by force.
But yes, it is true.
By acts of war.
The conquest was, you know, dire convert.
Right.
Unless if you were a Jew or a Christian, which was the people of the book, and then you basically were subordinate to the Muslims, but there was a heavy tax. I mean, there were a lot of issues. The other thing that I really strongly deal with in regard to the peace process, which, by the way, I personally believe that the only peace will come is when the Palestinians stop hating the Jewish people and blaming Israel for all their problems. The other issue that Americans must understand and really understand is the other refugees in the Middle East. There were two different refugees for the Israeli-Palestinian conflict. One was the Palestinians, who, by the way, left Israel mostly because the Arab leadership around the Middle East told them to leave so they can destroy Israel and then they will come back. Sadly, the Arabs lost. Israel won. We have the state of Israel. Now the Palestinians are paying the price. But the other refugees, which was done by the hands of the Arab governments, was the Jewish refugees from the Arab world, who most of them from Morocco to Yemen, most of them left the Arab countries. There are still quite a few Jews in Morocco, but Libya, for example, has virtually none. Egypt has virtually none. I mean, there's synagogues, there's Jewish monuments, but there is no real presence, Jewish presence, anymore in the Middle East. And most of these Jewish refugees went to Israel, where they were absorbed into full-fledged, you know, Jewish Israeli citizens. You know, they have the same rights, of course. Many of them went to America and France, depending on which foreign country occupied, you know, the Middle East. For example, Morocco was a French protectorate, and many of French Jews went to France because they had French passports. Iraq, for example, was British. Many Jews from Iraq went to England or even Israel, depending on their financial situation, how religious they were. But there was a sense of persecution that the world has to recognize about the Jewish refugees, besides the Palestinian refugees, who, yes, you know, there's too many of them lost their homes. Many of them do have the keys to their old homes. But the point is, what exactly are the Muslim governments, Lebanon, Syria, Jordan, what are they doing about their own people? Which is basically they're leaving them in refugee camps and they're using them as even third-class citizens because, you know, they're not considered part of the population of, you know, whatever country they're in. For example, the last comment I would like to make on this is that the Syrian, during the Syrian civil war, Bashar Assad, you know, bombed the Palestinian refugee camps, you know, because they started to show a little bit of support for the rebels. Mahmoud Abbas made a plea to Bashar Assad to stop the bombings of the refugee camps. You know, so this is a major issue. If you want to talk about peace, you have to be fair and balanced. And peace has to come from both, you know, from the Israeli perspective, the Jewish perspective, as well as the Palestinian perspective. But for the Palestinian perspective, you must understand two things. A, who is the Palestinian leadership? Is it really the Fatah or is it Hamas? And if it is the Fatah, then you have to hold the leadership responsible and that they cannot lie and deceive the West. And B, you have to understand, you know, what are the, you know, what is the implications of building a Palestinian state and who will govern the Palestinians in order to provide security for both the Palestinians and Israelis. That's the major challenge for the peace process.
Jeremy, Listen, I hate to do this, man. We've had some great discussion here. I got to wrap it up. Thank you. Thank you for being here, for talking. Look, you're going to hear more about Jeremy, and I'm grateful for you, man. Appreciate your friendship, your Zionism, just like myself. Mm-hmm. And you've done some work with David Bedeen.
A little bit.
Some volunteer work. I've helped him do some stuff, too. David, if you're listening, we want to get you on the show. I've tried to get you on. It's free advertisement. It's promoting your organization. We're going to get you on. This is Michael Gannot with Insight to Israel and America's Web Radio.